ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय कृष्णप्रसाय बुद्धलय श्रीमद्भक्तवेदान्त स्वामी नित्यनामने नमस्ते सारस्वत देव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य शतरणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री कृष्ण भागवत कैंडल टेन चैप्टर 69 वर्स 16 संपूज्य देवाशि किम्बायम् ऋषि पुराणो नारायणो नरसको विदिना विदितेन वाण्याभिभाष्य मितया अमृत निष्ठया तम् प्राह प्रभो भगवते कारवाम हे किम् संपूज्य देवाशिवाय मृष पुराणो नारायणो नरसको विदिनो दितेन कन्याभिभाष्यामृतायामृतमिष्टयातम् प्राह प्रभो भगवते करवामहे किम् सम्पूज्य देवाशवर्यामृष पुराणो नारायणो नरसकाविदिनो दितेन वाण्याभिभाष्यामृतायामृतमिष्टयातम् प्राह प्रभो भगवते करवामहे किम् Deva, among the demigods, Rishi, sage, Varyam, greatest, Rishi, sage, Purana, primeval, Narayana, Lord Narayana, Narasaka, the friend of Nara, Vidina, by scripture, Uditena, enjoined, Vanya, with speech, Abhibhashya, conversing, Mitaya, measured, Amrita, with nectar, Mishtaya, sweet, Tam, him, Narada, Praha, he addressed, Prabhu, O Master, Bhagavate, for the Lord, Karavama, we may do, hey, oh, Kim, what? Translation, after fully worshipping the great sage of the demigods according to Vedic injunctions, Lord Krishna, who is himself the original sage Narayana, the friend of Nara, conversed with Narada, and the Lord's measured speech was as sweet as nectar. Finally, the Lord asked Narada, what may we do for you, our Lord and Master? Purport in this verse, the words Narayana Narasaka indicate that Krishna is himself, the Supreme Lord Narayana, who appeared as the friend of the sage Nara. In other words, Lord Krishna is Rishi Purana, the original and supreme spiritual master. Nevertheless, following the Vedic injunctions, Vidinodatena, that a Kshatriya should worship the Brahmanas, Lord Krishna happily worships pure devotee Narada Muni. Text 17, Sri Narada said, O Almighty Lord, it is no surprise that you, the ruler of all worlds, show friendship with all people, and yet subdue the envious. As we well know, you descend by your sweet will in order to bestow the highest good on this universe by maintaining and protecting it. Thus your glories are widely sung. Report as pointed out by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, all living beings are in fact servants of the Lord. The Acharya quotes the following verse from the Padma Purana to elucidate. Akarenochate Vishnu Sir Ukarena Kachate Makaras Tu Tayor Dasa Panchavimsa Prakirtitaha. In the mantra, Om, the letter A signifies Lord Vishnu, the letter U signifies the goddess Shri, and the letter M refers to their servant, who is the 25th element. The 25th element is the Jiva, the living being. Every living being is a servant of the Lord, and the Lord is the true friend of all living beings. Thus, even when the Lord chastises envious persons like Jarasandha, such punishment amounts to real friendship, since both the Lord's chastisement and his blessings are for the benefit of the living entity. Translation. After fully worshipping the great sage of the demigods, according to Vedic injunctions, Lord Krishna, who was himself the original sage Narayana, the friend of Nara, conversed with Narada, and the Lord's measured speech was as sweet as nectar. Finally, the Lord asked Narada, "What may we do for you, our Lord and Master?" Sri Narada said, "O Almighty Lord, it is no surprise that you, the ruler of all worlds, show friendship for all people, and yet subdue the envious. As we well know, you descend by your sweet will in order to bestow the highest good on this universe by maintaining and protecting it. Thus your glories are widely sung." So in this verse here, the Supreme Lord Krishna concludes the worship of Narada Muni. And then we see here how he addresses him. He calls him Prabhu. He calls him the Master. He calls him Bhagavan. Even though generally we want to call Krishna Bhagavan, Bhagavan is calling Narada Bhagavan. "You are my Master, and what can we do for you?" And so this, of course, is we say traditional greeting. If a great sage comes in the house or to your residence, then you have to welcome him very nicely and respect him. This is considered to be part of the Grihastha Dharma, and any Grihastha should do that. If a guest comes, you have to welcome them, no matter who they are. And if, of course, if you're Kshatriya, then of course you, because one of your qualities is charity and serving the Brahmanas, then the Kshatriya especially would like to do this. And because Krishna is also the leader of the whole dynasty, then he has to set a very good example for everybody else. So therefore he will very meticulously carry out this type of worship of the Brahmana. But of course Narada Muni is very special, because not only is he a Brahmana, but he's also a Rishi, a great sage, and also he is sage of the Devatas. He is a very, very great sage. And more than that, of course, he is also a Shaktivesh avatar. Even though he's a Jiva, he's been specially empowered by the Supreme Lord. Not only is he a Shaktivesh avatar, also he is empowered with bhakti. That is his special empowerment. So that is very special. Sometimes the Lord will empower someone with jnana, like the Kumaras, or with karma, or with power to destroy, such as Parsaram, or power to lift up things, like lifting up the earth. The Shesha underneath the earth lifts up all the Bhumandala on his head. This is empowerment. But of all the different things, all the different Shaktis, bhakti is the ultimate Shakti of the Lord. Even though he has many powers by which he does marvelous things, the most wonderful Shakti is bhakti, which arises from the Halini Shakti, Haladini Shakti. So bhakti is very, very wonderful. So Narada Muni is empowered with this, so he's very, very special. He's a Jiva also, but he's empowered by the Supreme Lord with bhakti. So he's in a very, very high position as far as bhakti is concerned.
Not only has devotion, but he also gives devotion. He's empowered to instruct devotion and teach by his example everywhere. And of course, his story also is actually told in the Bhagavatam itself. There's a whole several chapters are dedicated to describing the Leela of Narada Muni. So he's very, very special among all the different jivas. Nevertheless, he is a jiva, and Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So in terms of ontology or tattva, we have to distinguish God from jiva. So therefore, we call him a Shaktivesh avatar because he's empowered, but still, he's a jiva. And then he's distinguished from the other avatars, such as Matsya and Kurma, etc., who are the Supreme Lord. So of all the forms of God, Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the ultimate form of God. He's the highest form of God. Still, Narada Muni is jiva. There's a distinction still. But we see that Krishna, who is the highest form of God, is worshipping Narada. And he's calling him Bhagavan, Master, etc. So it is not simply because of formality he does this also. That is one aspect, that because he should do as a king, etc., and he's a kshatriya, and he's a grihastha, he has to set an example for others. These are the reasons. But, of course, the other reason is that he also is a friend to his devotee. And he will glorify his devotee, just as Krishna glorifies Arjuna and puts him in a high position by driving his chariot. So Krishna does not mind putting himself in a lower position and glorifying his devotees, and especially a devotee like Narada Muni. So therefore, very spontaneous, he calls them, "Oh Lord, oh Master, what can we do for you?" He's very eager to welcome him. As I said yesterday, Krishna is also Nara Akriti. He has got the form of a human, or he's Manusha Rupa. Not only has a form of a human, but he acts very humanly. So he acts like a jiva. And this is confusing for many people, even for Lord Brahma. So here we see such a confusing incident where Lord Krishna is welcoming and calling Narada Muni Bhagavan. If Krishna does such worship, we should not think, therefore, Krishna is not God, and that maybe Narada Muni is greater than Krishna. No, that's not. Sometimes people will say, well, why is there instructions for worshipping Shiva or other devatas, like Rama worshipping Shiva in Mahabharata, or Rukmini worshipping Durga Devi before their marriage with Krishna, and described how she goes to the Durga temple, does this. And there's a whole stotra, I think, to Shiva before the battle of Kurukshetra. people become confused and say, well, why does the Supreme Lord do this, and why we have the pure devotees worshipping devatas, etc.? And here we see Krishna worshipping Narada Muni. The Lord will do this because of his great affection for his devotees. These are all his devotees that he doesn't mind worshipping, even though he's Supreme Lord. He is the most worshipable, but he does not mind worshipping. He likes to worship his devotees. He is controlled by his devotees. There's nothing wrong with this. No fault in the Lord for coming down from his position. It's not a fault in the Lord to do such things. Rather, it is a good quality. So often in Sanskrit, they speak of guna and dosha. Guna means good quality, dosha means bad quality. Generally, if a person shows bad qualities, then we like to criticize them. He's got a bad quality. And of course, if you're God, you can't have a bad quality. You shouldn't have, anyway. And if you do have a bad quality, then you're not God. So then, with Krishna, then people like to find faults. And we'll find that. They'll criticize, why did Krishna do that, and why did Krishna do that? So this is dosha. They're finding dosha. They're finding faults with Krishna. And in that way, then they're indicating, oh, Krishna's not God after all. If he has fault, how can he be God? And of course, the common was, why does Krishna marry so many queens, and why does he have so many gopis, and why does he have Rasalila, etc.? Huh? So that's finding, that's dosha. Krishna has dosha. It's false. But no, for in Krishna, no. They're seeming faults. They look like faults from our point of view in the material world. But actually, they are guna. They are good qualities. Huh? So what is fault in normal people is good quality in Krishna. In the material world, according to morality, we may say this is a bad quality. But when it is in God, when it is in Krishna, then it becomes a good quality. That's very difficult for many people to understand. But the devotee will understand that. So if God puts himself in a demeaning position by being a charioteer instead of a kshatriya, that's a bad principle. You can't. Why should you do that? We see in, for instance, the Pandavas didn't want to fight with Karna. Son of a chariot driver. We can't fight with him. And this caused the whole hatred of Karna for the Pandavas. So that generally, no, you can't associate with these low people. And Krishna's willing to take that position. He doesn't care. Why? Even he breaks the Dharma. He's supposed to set an example of Dharma and he breaks it. Why? Simply because of his friendship with the devotees. So Dharma is good, but devotion is higher. And if Arjuna shows great devotion for Krishna, Krishna will respond with equal devotion. And he'll do what is necessary for maintaining that relationship. So therefore, he doesn't mind breaking the rules of Dharma. Other people can criticize, but it's more important for him to follow the devotion of Arjuna. So therefore, he'll put himself in that position and break all the rules and become a chariot driver. So this is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So it's no longer a fault. He's not following Varnashram Dharma. He's demeaning himself, etc. Lord Krishna, but no. A higher principle is bhakti and prema. So therefore, he puts himself in that position that shows the exalted nature of the Supreme Lord, that he is willing to serve the devotee. And why? Because of his great attraction for the devotee. So attraction for the devotee and being controlled by the prema of the devotee is not a fault. That is a quality. And as we see in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami defines the last of the six characteristics of bhakti as Krishna Karshani, that bhakti attracts Krishna. And this manifests in Prem Bhakti. So Prem Bhakti completely attracts the Supreme Lord, and especially Krishna. Of all the different forms of God, Krishna becomes most attractive because his devotees have the highest prema. Most of them are in Dasya Rasa, and all the forms. So Krishna goes all the way up, and we get Mahabhava at the top. So the very intense prema in Krishna's devotees. And therefore, Krishna is willing to be completely controlled by that. So with Krishna, we'll see complete subservience to his devotees. He is conquered by his devotee completely and willing to do anything for them. So it is not a fault. If Krishna is controlled by bhakti of the devotee, that is not a fault. That is simply a glorification of bhakti in the Supreme Lord. He must do that as part of bhakti. Because the rule is, accordingly as you surrender unto me, I will respond to you. So that if he breaks that principle and says, this is a great devotee, we not respond, we stay distant from them, then this breaks the rule. Therefore, all of this, when Krishna does this and praises his devotee and serves his devotee and breaks the rules of Varna and Ashrama, sometimes even, it is not a fault. It is a great, great praise of Krishna and of devotional service. So this is the nature of Krishna. He is controlled by his devotees. So it's not simply setting example for everybody. That is also included, but it is actually he is attracted to his devotees, is willing to glorify them more than himself. And he likes doing that. He likes to do that. Put his devotees in good position. So Krishna enjoys driving the chariot for Arjuna. He's not thinking, well, I'm doing this, but actually I'm king or I'm supreme lord. No, he enjoys doing serving his devotees. He asked, what can we do for you? So this is, of course, customary when the sage, the Brahmin, comes to the house, then you have to say, oh, yes, what can we do for you? And you serve them and give them a seat and wash their feet and care for them, and then one has to speak properly. So we see here that Krishna speaks with very precise, sweet words. Mitaya Amrita Mishtaya. Very, very sweet words he speaks to him. And then he asks, what can we do for you? So he puts himself at the service of Narada Muni. And then Narada Muni, he praises the Lord back. Because Narada Muni understands that I'm the devotee of the Supreme Lord, and he preaches bhakti everywhere. Even though he's a Shaktivesh avatar, he's also a Dasya Rasa with the Lord. So he takes him, Krishna, as his Lord. So he praises the Lord back and addresses him. So he says here that you're the friend of everybody, and still, because of course we know that the Lord is Paramatma and he's the soul of everything and he's dear to everyone and he's affection to all living entities, is the nature of God. Same time he comes and he kills the demons. So this is one of the contradictions again in the Lord. God is all loving, then why does he kill people? God is all loving, why do we have karma in the material world? And God made karma and people suffer, so why did God do that? There's another dosha in God, and you can criticize God because of that. So God is to come in the material world, and then he goes and fights the demons, and fighting is also bad. Killing is bad, and the Lord does all of this. Why does he do that? So again, we have dosha. But it is not dosha, because everything is perfect in the Lord. So even the fighting is perfect. Fighting is part of the rasa of the Lord, and it's in the spiritual world. So there's only an aspect. It's not anger like material anger. It is the rasa in the spiritual world, Raudra. And this is a spiritual rasa. That's what Krishna expresses. So we cannot criticize the Lord. It's part of Ananda. And yet, for materialists, it looks like normal anger. And then, of course, there's the virya rasa also. Being proud. And when you wear kshatriya, then you have to be proud and like to fight, etc. So Krishna also shows that with the demons. Shows pride. That is part of the virya rasa. That's also spiritual rasa. Lord is complete. This, of course, should be a little bit maybe not such a dosha in one sense, because people like that in the material world see a courageous person or one that fights nicely. Where they're excited by that. Even though in the material world we'll say that's a fault. It's due to pride. It's due to so many things. But people like that in the material world. So Krishna displays that, but it's not material. It is part of virya rasa, spiritual. There's no material motivation in that one. In his fighting, in his display of pride and courage, etc. It's not material. And then he kills people. And as we know, one of the principles is maham sat sarva bhutani. You should not commit violence against any living entity. And it's very famous in the Upanishads. No violence, no violence. It's in the Vedas. So, and yet, Krishna goes out killing people, cutting off their heads with chakra, etc. So there's a fault in God. God has to kill people. Actually, he doesn't have to do that in most cases. He's got his shaktis to do everything. And that's how it's described. Actually, Krishna doesn't kill anybody. He has a sanghar shakti, which means destruction shakti. And so that's what acts for Krishna. He has srishti shakti, carries out the creation. And he has sanghar shakti, destroy everything. And of course, he has kala. Time, energy, destructive energy also. So Krishna doesn't really have to do anything personally. He can sit there and all of his energies can act like that. But it seems as if Krishna is doing everything. And yes, he is doing. He does. At the same time, his energies are there. And the actual destruction of the demon is carried out by his sanghar shakti. So he doesn't have to touch the demon at all. We don't see that. Still, people will say, criticize the Supreme Lord. Why does he have to do all this? Huh? So there is nothing wrong in this also if Krishna kills, because the killing is beneficial for everybody. And that is the whole point of this verse here, the second verse here, that the Lord comes and he bestows the greatest auspiciousness on everybody in the material world, in spite of the fact that he kills the demons and doesn't look like it's very auspicious for them. Because we expect the demons to get killed and they go to hell. That's not auspicious for them. It's auspicious for us, maybe, because we're not harassed by demons anymore. But for the demons, then it isn't. But yet, Krishna acts for everybody's good, not just the devatas and the devotees. He acts for even the demons' good. So, of course, people don't see that. But nevertheless, this is the Lord's intention. So when the Lord kills a demon, it is not the normal killing, and we kill because of greed or anger or hatred in the material world. That's the motivation, and that's all ignorance is part of tamogun. So the Lord's killing is not like that. He is not affected by any of the gunas. He's beyond the gunas. And therefore the result is completely different. In the material world, we do that killing and it leads to suffering and karma. And when the Lord kills a demon, it is not motivated by any of the gunas at all. It's motivated by the highest good for everybody. And therefore, the demon benefits. So when Krishna kills a demon, they get great benefit. When any form of the Lord kills a demon, they get great benefit. So when Hiranyakasipu is killed by Narasimhadeva, Narasimhadeva rips him apart. Doesn't go to hell. Then he becomes Ravana, another demon, but he gets good position and enjoys in Lanka for many, many years. So that was for Hiranyakasipu, that's very good. You'll think this is nice. He's Hiranyakasipu in one lifetime, and then he gets to be Ravana in another lifetime and enjoy again. So, no, he didn't get any bad thing for him. It's very good. Of course, for the devotees, not so good. Huh? And then Rama kills him again. And where does he go? Comes back as Shishupala. Shishupala doesn't suffer. He's got a good position. Everything again. And when Krishna kills him, what happens? Goes to Vaikuntha. So there's no suffering at all for demon. He ends up in the spiritual world. So we cannot say that Krishna is acting in a such a way he kills and then creates suffering for everybody. No, it is all auspicious for the demon also. The demon gets spiritual world, ultimately. So people may not see that, and therefore they'll criticize. Why does the Lord do this? Why does the Lord do that? So all of the qualities of the Lord are ultimately good qualities, guna, not dosha. But people will see dosha because we compare it with the material world and we'll say this is good and this is bad. So Krishna actually is beyond ordinary ethics and morality, Varnashram Dharma. Generally he follows, like a good king, he follows Varnashram Dharma. But when it comes to certain cases, and especially with his devotees, then he's free to break Varnashram Dharma because bhakti is higher than dharma. There's a whole discussion in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, fight or not fight. And they have arguments back and forth why they should not fight or why they should fight like this. And Arjuna gives arguments. If we have this war, then all the husbands are killed, then the women are single, and then the women don't have any husbands, and then they have mixed castes, and then they have children who are not same varna, you know, they're mixed varnas, like Kshatriya with a Vaishya husband or a Sudra husband, and then we get Varnashankara, and that's then the whole Varnashram system is finished. So he says this is one fault, and he gives so many reasons why, and then Krishna counters this no, and he gives his thing. So the whole principle there is, on one level, Arjuna's arguing in terms of dharma, Varnashram dharma. Can't do this because of this rule, that rule, that rule, and you destroy the Varnashram system. And then Krishna actually, generally, he ultimately comes to Jnana. Jnana is higher than dharma. So therefore you're the spirit soul, not the body. So therefore, all this doesn't really matter because you're not the body. This is all material consideration. So Jnana is higher than karma. So the Gana argument wins where there is says that where there is a contradiction of principles, that which is based on Gana is higher than the principle of Dharma. Because Dharma is material, Gana goes beyond material to soul. So therefore that principle is higher. We have to follow the higher principle. But of course we also know that higher than Gana is Bhakti. So where there's a contradiction of things, if it's done with Bhakti, then that justifies everything. Everything else is, forget everything else. The principle of Bhakti is higher. So that is the Supreme Lord. When he acts out of prema, then all the other things don't matter anymore. And all the rules of Varnashram Dharma and Gana or anything don't matter anymore. That supersedes everything. So that is the nature of the Lord. And that's not a fault, that is a good quality. So we cannot judge simply by rules of Dharma at all times with the Supreme Lord. We have to judge by Bhakti. And that's the highest principle. Okay, any questions?
You said that Krishna is controlled by his devotees, especially by Bhakti.
Yeah.
And intensity of the Bhakti.
Yeah.
So, why would Krishna leave Vrindavan if...
That's it's a very big thing. Why would he leave Vrindavan? Because they're the best devotees, and he promised to come back. I'll be away a few days, and he didn't come back. And he promised the highest devotees, the gopis, when he left. He sent one message, two messages, three. I'm coming back. And that's the promise of the Supreme Lord to the highest devotees in Vrindavan. And then, of course, he went to Mathura, and Nanda and the cowherd boys came, and the elder cowherd boys came there for some days, and they saw him kill Kamsa, etc. And then Krishna was, Ugrasena put on the throne, etc. And then Krishna came to Nanda Maharaj and said, now you go back with all the cowherd men. You go back to Vrindavan. I will come in a few days. So again he made a promise. I'll come back in a few days. And so Nanda Maharaj said, Krishna's made a promise. He went back with all the cowherd men. And they waited there for a few days. And Krishna didn't come back. And they waited a month. Krishna didn't come back. We had 2 months. Krishna didn't come back. And finally, Krishna sent Uddhava. And Uddhava went there. And then he saw the state of the Brajavasi. They're all almost dead because of their separation from Krishna. And then, of course, he delivered the message of Krishna to the gopis. Then he went back to Mathura. And then he announced to the people, you know, the Vrishnis, the Yadus. He said, Brajavasis are greater devotees than us. Their devotion is higher. So, why did Krishna do this and why he broke his promise? Krishna doesn't break his promise. He says, I'll protect my devotee always. My devotee is never vanquished, etc. So it sounds very peculiar if Krishna breaks a promise to the highest devotees. Not just ordinary devotees, but the highest devotees. And it sets a very bad example, of course, of how we're to believe Krishna at all. Krishna's a big liar. He doesn't come back. And that's exactly what the gopis say. Krishna's a liar. He promised like this and he didn't come back. We shouldn't have faith in him anymore. He's a very bad person. No one should fall in love with Krishna because he'll break your heart. You make a promise and he won't come back. So that is a big problem. And then we see that after many years, finally they met Krishna in Kurukshetra. But that was many years later. And again, they tell, you come back to Vrindavan with us. And he said, no, I cannot do so because I have to kill some more demons. And I made a promise to the people in Dwarka, I'll come back there. So I'll come back. And then he made another promise, I'll come back after I kill all the demons. And so they went back again. Another promise of Krishna. So it looks as if Krishna never kept his promise at all, and he kept avoiding the Vrajavasis in spite of them being the highest devotees. So that is a great puzzle for many people. So Vishnu Chakravarti solves that problem by saying that, yes, Krishna did this in order to show the intensity of separation, because in the separation, the highest aspect of love is revealed, of Mahabhava. And to show that, the Vrajavasis were the highest devotees, then he separated himself. And that requires some time of separation. Well, we could say, well, maybe a few months, but not, 100 years. So he said, yes, and that's so. So therefore, he says, the separation took place for about 3 months, and then he returned. But we don't see that. But he says the indication is there. And that's the only way that we have to give that explanation that he did return, because otherwise bhakti is meaningless. If Krishna leaves the highest devotees and breaks his promise to the highest devotees, it doesn't mean it. Bhakti doesn't mean anything. Krishna's cruel. So we cannot say that. So Krishna did separate himself, but he also went back. After his, intense 3 months, then he went back again. Of course, even before that, he explains that he went back in one sense, because in the intensity of separation, Krishna has suddenly appears within them. It's called spurti, and Krishna appears, and then he gets some little satisfaction that way. But then again, direct appearance, Krishna came back in another form. We don't see that. So then he says there are actually two Vrindavans and two sets of Vrajavasis and two sets of Krishna at that point when he came back. The one we see, the Prakat form, and the Aprakat form where Krishna is back there. So the Prakat form, the manifested form, is the form in separation where the Vrajavasis are Krishna is in Dvarka, Mathura and Dvarka. That's one form. And by his Shakti, Achintya Shakti, then after 3 months he said, okay, that's enough. I'll fulfill my promise now. And then he went back to Vrindavan again in another form. But so there's another set of Vrajavasis, and they meet Krishna, and then they go off the pastimes forever. Like that. So he went back in another form. So there's two Vrindavans then. One in separation and one with Krishna after that point. But we don't see one. So in this way he fulfilled his promise. So how is that justified? So therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti says, if you look closely in the Bhagavatam, then you'll see when Uddhava returned, is sent by Krishna to Vrindavan, it's very strange. We see two different descriptions of Raja when he goes. One is a happy description. He sees all the nice cows in the fields, and the cowherd men are shouting at the cows, and they're feeding them and doing all this. So that's the meeting, a revelation of the meeting of Krishna there. Krishna's back there again. And then we see another version of Vrindavan where everybody is completely almost dead. And Nanda and Yasoda are sitting in their house, and there's spider webs all over everywhere. And the kitchen there's no fire in the kitchen. The kitchen is completely dusty with leaves all over it, and they can't do anything. And they have to call in a Brahmin to cook for Uddhava because they can't do anything. So we see two contrasting versions of Vrindavan mentioned in the Bhagavatam there. So this is the hint given by Sukadeva Goswami that actually the two things are there, but one is not revealed explicitly. So this is the way in which we have to explain, because otherwise there's a huge contradiction. And so Krishna will never break his promise. He will come back. And why did he do it? Why did he separate like that for so long? To show the intensity of separation and that the Vrajavasis are the highest devotees. And then he revealed that to Uddhava. And Uddhava went back to the Yadus and he said, yes, they are the highest devotees. And the gopis are the highest devotees. So then Uddhava says, I aspire for that bhakti of the gopis. They are the highest devotees. So in this way, Krishna glorified the gopis also through Uddhava. And so this is actually Krishna's repayment to the gopis. Because during the Rasa Lila, or just before the Rasa Lila, was a whole conversation with the gopis and Krishna, and the gopis are angry at Krishna because they say, why do you disappear like this on us and break our hearts? Because, suddenly he disappeared and they were all in the forest, and suddenly Krishna disappeared, and then they were completely upset, and they wandered into the forest, they went deep in the forest, and they couldn't find Krishna, and they gave up finally. And then they went onto the bank of the Jamuna and were chanting Krishna's name, and then suddenly Krishna appeared. So then they became a little angry with Krishna, even though they were overjoyed, and they said, why do you do this to us? Why do you torture us like this? Why do you disappear like this? Why do you treat us like this? So then Krishna said, actually, you are greater than I am because your sacrifice is greater. You sacrifice everything for me. You give up your mother and father and your husbands and your babies and your reputation and everything to satisfy me. I don't do that. I don't give up Mother Yasoda. I don't give up Nanda Maharaj. I don't give up anything. But you give up everything for me. So you are higher than me, actually. And I cannot repay that. This devotion you show is so great that I can in no way repay you for that. But I like to glorify my devotees, so to show that great devotion, I've done this. I've lured you into the forest like that, but this is to show the world that you give up everything for me and you don't care for it at all. So this shows you're the greatest devotees. So they were a little satisfied with that. But again, when he announced, then he separated himself and went to Mathura. So again, when Uddhava went back, and then again, he announced to the world, these are the greatest devotees. So this is the only way that Krishna could repay them, in one sense, by glorifying them and telling the world that these are the greatest devotees, and they're the highest. So anyway, so therefore Krishna didn't break his promise after all. But he separated himself to show the display to the world the intensity of their love. Then he went back after 3 months. Then, of course, the other manifestation, the Prakat manifestation, they were in separation for years and years and years and years and years. And then finally they met at Kurukshetra. And then Krishna made another promise. And then actually kept that promise. It's not in the Bhagavatam, but it's in the Padma Purana. So after he killed all the demons, I think Dandavakra was the last demon he killed. After that, the Bhagavatam doesn't kill any more demons. So after he killed Dandavakra at the gate of Mathura, then he crossed over the Jamuna River and he went back to Vrindavan. And then it's described how he was there, and it was just like before again. And then he met the Brajavasi. So that's a Prakat Lila. Also, he finally fulfilled that and they became. And then it says they went to the spiritual world. And another Krishna went back to Dwarka again and carried on the pastimes there. And so finally, and then we can say the two merged into one more or less at that point, where the Prakat manifestation went back to Vrindavan and the two kind of merged together. So therefore Krishna, in one form, yes, he did break his promise, in another form he didn't.
And so we hear, as you mentioned, Krishna came back after 3 months. In the monastery, we hear that Krishna doesn't walk out of Vrindavan.
Uh-huh. Vishma Chakra denies that. He says, yes, Krishna does leave Vrindavan. He does. He denies that. He says, yes, that's wrong. He does that. He separates himself from the devotee for certain purposes, but he comes back.
Yeah. I've heard the people that the residents of Vrindavan that were in separation of Krishna, Krishna came back after the 3 months.
Yeah.
Were they in two sort of lilas with Krishna? Or?
Yeah, but there's two sets of Brajavasis and two sets of Krishna. The one we don't see and the one we see. And so how can that be? Well, Krishna's yoga maya potency. And the two don't clash. So there's two Yasodas and two Nandas, and one is separation and one, but they're not conscious of each other. And so the two Leelas go on simultaneously by the extraordinary power of Krishna, because yoga maya potency. Okay. Hare Krishna.